Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 3:27 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is January 24th. I thought we'd kick off in Asia with the Australian dollar. It's up to 70 cents and clearly now firming from the region of the 200-day moving average. It's broken the sequence of lower rally highs and approaching the 1,000-day moving average. Now, it hasn't been able to sustain a move above that one. Really, since the beginning of 2022, and even that move failed. But on this occasion, it looks like more broad-based US dollar weakness, and then the strength in the commodity complex is being aided by China's opening up. So there's certainly the potential that there will be more interest in commodity-related currencies over the course of this year. And that's certainly helping to propel the ASX, which is right back in the region of its peaks from 2021. So we've had a good sized rebound over the last 4 weeks and clearly bouncing from the 7,000 level and the region of the 200-day moving average. I think if we just look at the history of the last decade, it's been a jolly choppy environment overall. But this entire range that's been forming for the last 2 years was right in the region of the peak from back in 2007, and it does look like we're going to see additional upside from here. Now, when we think about the bond market, and it certainly helps when you remember the ticker, but the 10-year yield is back around the 3.5% handle. That's pretty similar to what the rate is in the USA. And it's also very clearly broken the downtrend. So 3% could potentially offer support. That was certainly an area where we saw resistance all the way between 2015 and 19. And now it's basically bouncing from that area. But of course, that is, or a lot is going to depend on just how high interest rates go and then stay, and the property market and its nascent recovery is going to be very much dictated by what happens in terms of those yields. Now, when we think about Japan, the Nikkei has bounced in here, and it was up nearly 400 points, so pushing up and through the short-term period of weakness that we had last week. So it popped on the upside on the refusal of the Bank of Japan to abandon its yield curve control, came straight back down the next day, then steadied the day after, but has popped on the upside the last 2 days. And this is now follow-through on the upside to confirm support. And the yen, having weakened for a couple of days, was in negative territory in here today, and it has not broken that the dollar's sequence of lower rally highs just yet. So it would be a little bit premature to conclude that the yen's strength is over just yet. Now, the mainland Chinese market is still closed. And it will be closed for all of this week. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong was up nearly almost the exact same number of points as the Nikkei and continues to extend this rebound. So there's certainly a willingness to think that China's opening up is going to reignite the same kind of consumer and industrial demand that opening ups did in most other countries in 2021. And that's helping to support interest in Chinese stocks, and not least because they're coming off of really quite depressed levels. Well, then that's also sapping some of the demand for India. So the Indian market was in mildly negative territory in here today, but it's certainly not surging on the upside. And I think a good part of the reason for that is it's already in the region of its all-time peak. And this just looks like a consolidation overall. I still think, though, that we could see some disappointing action from India in the short term, just because a lot of the money that's going into emerging markets now is flowing towards China. And of course, that should also help to support the iShares emerging market, or the MSCI Emerging Market Index, which really looks a lot like a Chinese index because of that strong weighting there. Then, what's rather interesting is that Germany is coming around to the idea that they're going to have to do more to support the war in Ukraine. So that's been particularly beneficial for Rheinmetall, and the share closed at a new all-time high in here today. Now it s surged on the upside immediately after the war was announced. Subsequently, pulled back to test the 150 euro area, and then has rebounded in very emphatic fashion over the last 3 or 4 weeks. They're basically going to send, are potentially going to send, every available unit into Ukraine, and that's makes sense. That's where the front is, but the national priorities of various governments mean that rearmament is absolutely essential. What I find rather interesting is that we've had really quite a lot of volatility in some of the defense stocks in the USA. Raytheon is basically up on the day just about, but it had exceptional volatility in here today. That was on the back of profits doing better than expected, but orders doing worse than expected. So we had this really exceptionally volatile day. And what we also saw in here today was that some of the circuit breakers were triggered on the New York Stock Exchange this morning because there were very large sell orders. And certainly some people were taking money off the table. We have had quite a bit of volatility in some of the companies that have been reporting earnings. And Johnson & Johnson's another one where it had basically popped on the upside following earnings and then gave it all up again to finish pretty much unchanged. And again, this is also a pretty choppy uptrend overall. That doesn't mean that it's not an uptrend, but some of these ranges are really lengthy, going on for years at a time. What we are starting to see, however, is more interest in industrial type companies. So, GE is selling off bits and pieces of the company, and they have sold off their healthcare portion of the business. So that's helping to support the rump. Now it's coming up to test the upper side of what's effectively a 5-year base formation. And if it can sustain a move above $80, well, that would complete the base formation. So there's the potential here that a revitalization of interest in the industrial quarter should be beneficial. And then Fluor, which is a major construction company with very close ties to the US government and the military, is also firming here and pushing up to new recovery highs. Now they own 57% of NuScale Power, and NuScale was also exceptionally volatile in here today. So we've had really a lot of very big moves in individual shares, even though the stock market itself hasn't had a big move. The individual volatility in the stocks has been really quite profound. Now, when we think about the S&P 500, it's continuing to steady from the region of the 200-day moving average. It has not yet broken the sequence of lower rally highs, but it's certainly looking likely. Now, of course, we're still in the quiet period heading into the Fed meeting next week. So we're not going to have any statements from Fed officials this week. And investors expect that the Fed will reduce the size of the hike next week, and or I guess in February, and that they will only hike by 25 basis points. And that's pretty much baked in already. And the market is rallying into that event. So there's certainly some buy the rumor going on right now. And that, of course, opens up the possibility that we'll have some sell the news. And leading indicators were also announced or released in here today. And the speed with which they're contracting is associated with recessions. So even though we've I think there is this rather interesting argument. The first would be that leading indicators aren't leading, and they're more like a coincident indicator. But that doesn't really matter, because it's about sentiment. And they peaked in 2021. They came back below zero in the middle of last year, and they're accelerating lower. And that implies that a recession is basically inevitable. And then we also have the yield curve spread, which is as inverted as it has been at any point in the past. And we have to go all the way back to the early 1980s to find a time when it was this inverted. So there is certainly going to be a recession. The only real question is how deep is it going to be? And we are certainly also starting to see that earnings are rolling over. So let's think about Microsoft. So they just released their earnings, and the share is basically unchanged. And it's hovering here in between the 1,000-day and the 200-day moving averages. And we've had a pretty substantial unwinding of the bull market over the course of the last year. Cloud computing is still its growth sector, and that helped to offset the decline of about 19% in sales of their gaming equipment and their the Surface laptop and other electronics. So cloud computing isn't going to evaporate, but the days when every imaginable company that said it was involved in cloud did phenomenally well are over. And I suspect that if we break it down into the three component parts of cloud computing, which are the data centers, and obviously Microsoft is a big one of those, the back end infrastructure, which are the companies that write the software and produce the widgets that go into figuring out how to make the cloud work. And then the third is the app writers, so the software that basically utilizes the cloud. Well, that middle management portion, where you're talking about really it's infrastructure software and small widgets that really go into or enhance the cost, and then you are basically signing up to cloud. You're paying for the database, and you're paying for several of the middle market operators, and then you're probably buying one or two of the front end producers. Well, it's very easy for those front end or the full back end to then disintermediate the middleman. And that's basically what the big decline was in 2022. It was those middle companies that really got hit hardest. But the ETF is beginning to steady in here. It does not mean that it's going to go straight back up to 120, but it does suggest that we're going to get more ranging activity overall. And I think that's the most likely scenario as we move forward. Then, one of the reasons why Raytheon was so volatile in here today is because there are doubts about the commitment of the Republican Party to supporting defense spending. So, obviously, there's a good reason to talk about how much money is being spent on defense and whether it's being spent efficiently, effectively, or honestly. But the reality is there's a war going on in Ukraine, and I don't think the lead country in NATO is going to allow Russia to take over the entire country. That means that there's going to have to be a commitment to continuing to spend money to support the Ukrainian military. And on top of that, there's going to be a rearmament process because the largest military in the world, and arguably the best supplied, isn't going to do without an arsenal. So there is likely to be a significant increase in military spending, and particularly the production of armaments over the course of the next few years. So then let's think about the bond markets. So we certainly have a dollar weakness, but bond yields are starting to contract again. The reality is that corporate earnings are starting to roll over. The speed with which interest rates went up was incredibly swift, and it takes time for the lagged effect of that tightness to show up in economic statistics, but they will show up. And with corporate profits beginning to roll over, the most likely scenario is that a recession's inevitable. In a recession, then demand gets squeezed out of the system. Demand has been the primary factor behind a lot of the inflation, and a lot of the supply challenges have been ironed out. So then it really is mostly about demand right now. And that demand component will get solved in a recession. And there's the clear potential that yields will contract meaningfully. Well, a weaker dollar and meaningfully lower yields are beneficial for gold, and gold prices continue to eke out new recovery highs. Silver has been much more range bound, and it did steady in here today, but it seems like investors need convincing, and I still think that there's clear potential that silver will outperform over the course of the next stage of the bull market. There's even the potential that since we're already at around $25 for silver, then the potential for a doubling isn't really all that, it's not that ambitious. Doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to double on the next breakout, but it may double, easily double, before we see the end of this bull market. And considering that the dollar is only really just beginning to decline, there is a lot of potential for upside in the precious metal markets. It's also worth just bearing in mind that the reserves and stockpiles of industrial resources are quite low, and nickel is now firming from the region of the 200-day moving average, and that is despite the really exceptional volatility that we've had in the price. The zinc price is also starting to attract interest. There's a lot more talk about zinc iron batteries, and that would certainly help to support the price, and it is now firming from the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And I do think we need to get lots of back history in to appreciate just where we are, because zinc had a spectacular run in 2005 and 6. Then it had a big run-up in the aftermath of the pandemic and gave up more than half it, and subsequently is only just beginning to rebound. Then companies like South32 announced earnings in here as well today, and it is now firming up to new recovery highs, pulling away from the region of the 200-day moving average. So that's really quite encouraging action. And Glencore is also pausing in the region of the 1,000-day moving average, but was at a new all-time high yesterday. And this remains a very clear, consistent trend overall, where it's found support in the region of the 200-day moving average on multiple occasions. Of course, we also need to pay attention to what's happening in the oil price. And oil was a little bit softer in here today, easing back from that $90 area. The big question for the oil price is just how weak will the global economy get? The suppliers of oil are reasonably well disciplined, and there isn't a huge amount of money going into exploration right now. But so that's the there's both bullish and bearish arguments because there's not a lot of money going into increasing supply that should support it. But then, of course, you have the question of demand heading into a recession, and that suggests that we could have choppier action. But the most important point is that the US government has said in plain English they're going to start buying it when it gets to about $72 for West Texas Intermediate, and they'll buy for the Strategic Reserve. So then, really, to break the support building argument, we'd need to see prices sustain a move below $70. But I suspect over the coming months we'll see plenty of opportunities for retests of that level. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.